from Massachusetts to New York to former Governor Mitt Romney. You are about to hear some startling information. Stay with us.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm expecting today's broadcast to be one of those fasten your seat belts and listen carefully shows. It's Wednesday, means our focus is on moral cultural issues. We'll be interviewing some folks from the organization Mass Resistance, based, yes, in Massachusetts, active in other states. And this is a first. Just when I announced that they'd be on with me, I already got an email from a non-Christian, but a concerned follower of the broadcast saying that they are a hate group like the KKK. So they got blasted before they're even on. We're going to be speaking with them today. The second half hour, we're going to be speaking with someone from Mass Resistance who has focused in on the record of former Governor Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. If you are a follower of Romney, a supporter of Romney, I especially encourage you to listen in the second half of the show and to be able to call in with your side of the story. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org, click on The Line of Fire, or on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown. Now, before I get to our guest, beginning with Brian Kammacher from Mass Resistance, I want to update you on something of real importance. You know, I have no delight in saying I told you, I warned you. I really have no delight in that. I would rather be wrong about my warnings than right. Wrong about, hey, this is coming our way. I'd rather be wrong about it than right about it. And I've been interacting privately with some listeners to the broadcast who are gay identified and find to, you know, claim I may have good intentions, but I'm actually full of hate. So I understand your perspective. I know I'm speaking to folks from lots of different backgrounds, perspectives right now. But I will nonetheless sound an alarm, all right? The professional counseling organizations, therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, recognize that people have the right to self-determination. In other words, if someone comes in and says, you know, I'm not happy with these feelings I'm experiencing. I feel badly about myself and I want to change. And the counselor does their best to work with that person to help bring about positive change. There has been increasing pressure on counseling organizations, therapists, from various professional organizations and then privately gay activists and others saying if a man comes in or a woman comes in saying I have unwanted same-sex attractions, I'm not happy living a homosexual lifestyle, okay? Not putting this on someone else. They themselves say, I'm not happy living like this. I desire to change. I want to change. Will you help me change? Will you help me deal with unwanted same-sex attractions? Okay. That person will be told, and increasingly, no, you should just embrace these attractions. That's the right thing to do. And in fact, I have warned pastors, leaders say, I don't want to get involved in the same-sex marriage issue. I don't want to get involved in these other issues there. I just don't want to get involved with them because they are. It's political. And I said, listen, you don't understand. The next thing coming, if you don't speak up now for what's right, yeah, in love for the people involved, but for what you believe is right, your moral, spiritual convictions, next thing you'll be told is you can't tell someone they can change, that it's impossible for a homosexual to change. You will not be allowed to tell them they can change. And then the next thing, you won't be allowed to say, even on a religious basis, that homosexual practice is sinful. Well, if you've been following the news, the husband of Michelle Bachmann, who is a professional counselor, Christian counselor, has now come under tremendous attack. Why? For his firm counseling someone that they can change, that they can come out of homosexuality. She is getting blasted. He is getting blasted. Friends, we're at a point now where freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and even freedom for self-determination is being increasingly taken away. 866-34-TRUTH. Back with Brian Kammacher from Mass Resistance. Trust me, you don't want to miss this.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I don't know if you have heard the latest news from New York, but the first of what could be many, the first clerk has resigned from a position rather than have to sign same-sex marriage certificates. Of course, the press will vilify that person as a bigot. Others will look at that person as a hero of conscience, saying, hey, I can't do this in good conscience. It has nothing to do with hate. It has to do with the meaning of marriage. 866-34-TRUTH online, askdrbrown.org. It's my delight to welcome to the Line of Fire broadcast Brian Kammacher from Mass Resistance. Great talking with you today, sir.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Now, let me ask you a question right up front. This is a Christian station. We've got listeners, well, folks listening on WEZE in the greater Boston area. We've got listeners from all backgrounds across America, but largely Christian, and they're used to taking on issues from a Christian perspective and feeling a moral imperative to stand up for what's right from a Christian perspective. But you're not Christian yourself, correct?
No, I'm Jewish. We once had a regular radio show on WEZE, a weekly show. So we're used to the station and we're used to Christian radio.
But, right. So my question is, because it'd be interesting for Christian listeners to hear this, as a Jewish man, what is it that has moved you to get so involved at great personal cost and at the cost of your reputation and getting vilified in the media and being called a hate group? What moved you to give your time, your effort, your energy, your finances to stand up for moral principles in America? Because this is indicating it's not just a Christian issue here.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that the motivations that I have are probably the same as the motivations that, you know, anyone else in this movement has. You know, that there's some terrible things going on that you know, we need to help stop. And the closer you get to them, the worse you can see that they are. But also, the closer you get to them, the closer you're forced to become to God.
Mm.
And you know, everyone I know who has gotten involved with this has become closer to God through their activism, because you're faced with tremendous evil. I mean, I hate to say it that way, but that's basically what it is. And you can't confront it and deal with it and stay sane any other way.
I understand that. Now, are you saying that if two men or two women love each other and want to spend the rest of their lives together, that in itself is an act of tremendous evil? Or is there more going on that concerns you?
Well, you know, that would be the spin that the homosexual activists would put on it. I think the evil that I'm referring to is the movement and its you know, tremendous hostility and you know, toward believers. It's proselytizing of kids in the schools. It's extremely aggressive, nasty nature on anyone who even questions what's going on, you know. But particularly, you know, the things that they do with kids in schools, you can't describe it any other way than that. Now, you know, homosexual, you know, actions between, you know, two adults, it's certainly, you know, a public health problem, and there's you know, reams and reams and reams of issues regarding that. You know, you have to ask yourself, why can't homosexual men give blood in the United States? There is no place in this country where if you have had sex with a man since the 1970s, you can give blood. The Obama CDC, as left-wing as they are, as pro-gay as they are, won't relent on that. Why is that? You know, there's obviously some problems here. You know, there's... Excuse me. I mean, there's obviously some very, very serious health issues besides the, you know, mental health issues and the emotional issues and, you know, all the other issues regarding that lifestyle. So I think it's something that, you know, people need to take seriously. And, you know, the refrain from the, you know, the gay movement that you're a hater, it's just stupid. You know, that's their tactic. And it's like, you know, saying that if you're against people smoking in public places or smoking, then you hate people that smoke. Or if you're an anti-gambling activist, that you hate people that gamble. I mean, it's an absurd, ridiculous idea.
Right. If you're concerned about obesity, then you hate fat people.
Yeah.
When a doctor tells an obese person, you know, you really need to lose weight, otherwise it's going to affect your health, that's actually love, not hate, or it's simply professionalism from the doctor. But let me ask this, though. Mass resistance is famous for documenting things, for getting into meetings, be it a congressional hearing, be it a school meeting, be it a gay pride parade or event, and simply documenting what happens, getting audio, video, actual photographs and things like that. And of course, you're vilified. I mean, if you take a picture of something very unseemly, you're the one that's somehow guilty, as opposed to you expose something that ought not to be in public and ought not to be on display. But when you're talking about what happens in schools, and when you use the word evil in terms of proselytizing kids and things like that, obviously you're going to take a lot of flack for statements along those lines. And you're going to be told, look, this is just a matter of bullying. Gay kids get bullied in school all the time. They get picked on. There's acts of violence. They get depressed. They get suicidal. How dare you call just educating kids so that they won't bully anymore? How dare you call that evil? Obviously, there's more going on than just saying don't bully kids.
Well,
so tell our listeners plainly. I mean, obviously,
that doesn't actually happen. I mean, when I describe like the Fistgate issue, or the anal sex pamphlets given to kids, and we show people these things, and we say, you know, there's something terribly wrong here, or the little black book, which is a horrible, disgusting thing on our that was given out at one high school, and we say, you know, this is bad stuff. They really can't suggest that, oh yeah, it's really good because it's stopping bullying. They've never even attempted that kind
right,
of an absurd
right.
line. So
you're talking about material, seminars,
right.
things like that are encouraging
yeah.
kids into sexual behavior. And we have to be careful with how much we say just on radio and with folks with kids in cars and things.
But right. I'm telling you, these kinds of things actually happen in the schools. And,
oh, yeah, I understand. I understand.
You know, now the actual anti-bullying agenda, that is problematic, of course, because what we've shown and basically demonstrated is that it's the gay groups using that problem to push their, you know, various indoctrination into the schools. And furthermore, we've shown that behavioral scientists agree that doesn't work. You know, that if they were really interested in stopping bullying, they wouldn't do that. They would do actual, you know, things that work. But none of the things that the gay groups are pushing, you know, have any serious legitimacy at all. They just do it because they could bully legislators into accepting that.
And you've been at the actual meetings. You've actually seen bullying of legislators. You've documented on massresistance.org, correct?
Well, a lot of it goes on behind the scenes. But we've been to the public hearings. We've been at the state house and testified. That's for sure.
All right, we've got about a minute and a half before the break, but maybe just to open this up, and then when I come back, I want to ask you about what actually happened behind the scenes in New York. But same-sex marriage has been, quote, legal in Massachusetts for a number of years now. Gay activists would say the sky hasn't fallen. It's really had no big effect. You would profoundly differ with the idea that it's had no effect thus far, correct?
Oh, it's had a tremendous effect, and we've documented that. And our, you know, the paper that we wrote has been used around the country in helping stop gay marriage in legislatures from as far away as Hawaii. You know, so yeah, absolutely.
Right, and just last night I was looking at what you've documented on massresistance.org. And friends, if you've never been to the website, it is controversial. What you have to decide, is it controversial because it is telling the truth? Is the controversial nature of what's there the fact that it's exposing things that are really happening? So I encourage you to visit there, and they could also really use your support. They get a lot done, and they're a very small organization. Take a look in particular on what has actually happened. Go to massresistance.org, and we've got links on our website as well, on AskDrBrown.org. Go there and find out what's actually happened already in Massachusetts as a result of same-sex marriage being legalized. What's happened in the schools, what's happened in other ways. Just take a look and draw your own conclusions. The facts are presented. When we come back, I want to ask Brian about some of the things happening behind the scenes in New York with the passing of same-sex marriage there, and also find out some positive victories that Mass Resistance has won. 866-34-TRUTH.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, if you're listening to this broadcast and you are hostile to Mass Resistance and you feel that there is false information on their website, take the time to research it and call me, and we'll talk about it, all right? We'll talk about the information there. You can tell me if the pictures have been doctored. You can tell me if the documents presented are untrue or the video clips are untrue. The testimonies of people that are presented on there are untrue. Have at it, all right? 866-34-TRUTH. Back with Brian Kammacher of Mass Resistance. Brian, you were closely involved in what was happening with the passing of the same-sex marriage bill in New York. I know you went sacrificially from Massachusetts to be part of that, even it's outside of your state. There were things happening behind the scenes that obviously mainstream press didn't report.
We actually got a call from activists asking us to come. Let me just interject one quick thing regarding the validity of the stuff on our website. The gay activists themselves acknowledge that the stuff that we've done is true. We've never had anyone, rarely even claim, but never prove that anything that we've ever had there is untrue, and certainly not the pictures and the tape recordings.
Oh, yeah, and that's why I just tell folks, because it's easy to throw the hate. Well, they're just haters. Well, okay, what's hateful about saying that really bad stuff is being taught to young people in school and being and influencing them to get involved in sexual activity and having sex seminars for little kids? Tell me what's good about that. Tell me why people should be proud about displaying certain things in a public parade and so on and so forth. So when they just are going to say, well, that's hate. Well, okay, show me what's false about it. So that's my challenge, and that's why I've quoted you in A Queer Thing Happened to America, and you're even gracious enough to let me use one of the pictures for one of the pride parades
want.
There. Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to New York, we got a call in the middle of the week saying we need you tomorrow. To lobby some of these Republican legislators and let them know what happened in Massachusetts. And, early in the morning I got in my car. It's about a 2.5, 3-hour drive to Albany. And I spent the entire day there, and it was a full day. I mean, I lobbied several, spoke personally with several of the legislators. I was interviewed on the local NBC affiliate television. We talked to a lot of people. We were involved with a lot of stuff. I thought the Massachusetts legislature was sleazy. I mean, the double talk and the disinformation and the sellout that I saw there was quite profound. I mean, the Republicans basically sold out their principles to pressure from various places, notably the Democratic governor. It was, I mean, to tell you how bad it was, between the entire, legislature, the one legislator there who was carrying the flag for traditional marriage was a self-described liberal Democrat.
Yeah.
This Representative Diaz, who from the South Bronx, who was also a Pentecostal minister. He was the one who was the public face. Of the entire the Republicans, they were hiding in the shadows. It was really terrible. And this Senator Diaz was something. I mean, he brought in 5 busloads of, you know, Hispanic church people from the South Bronx, and they had a huge rally, and it was a killer. But the pressure and the threats and the Republicans basically caved in like nothing you've ever seen. I've seen a lot.
Yeah, friends, if you're in the York area, remember, letthepeoplevote.com. Let the people vote. There are going to be rallies July 24th all over the New York area. And for those that ever wonder if I'm politically partial here, listen, friends, it's not a political show. And when Republican leadership needs to have their feet held to the fire, you bet it's going to happen. Hey, we've just got about another minute. You had a victory, though, helping in Maryland with a bill that was going to be passed there. So you've seen fruit to your effort. What happened there? Because we've got many listeners in the greater D.C. area as well.
Maryland was really something. They had a gay marriage bill, just like in New York, and they had the votes to pass it. And they took some of our material, including and it was sent out to several thousands and thousands of people across the state. I worked with personally with some of the major activists there. Other people got involved, and by the time the pressure from pro-family people was done, even some of the sponsors of the bill were so scared that they voted against it, and it was just an incredible victory. They couldn't pull it off after the pro-family people really got going. And it was largely, a lot of church people, a lot of black churches were involved, some Hispanic churches, and they just came to the forefront. And it was really something. It shows what can happen.
So it was both a matter of people saying, hey, look, this will cost you votes, but also bringing the truth to them, showing them what this is about, what the implications really are.
I mean, our piece, What Same-Sex Marriage Did to Massachusetts, was passed on to every legislator and mailed around. Our horror stories of what happened in the schools here was sent out probably to a few hundred thousand people. It was so prevalent that one of the local TV stations showed it. And, this is the kind of thing that needs to happen. So it shows that gay marriage can be beat.
Yeah,
and it was also beat in Rhode Island, too, although they did sneak in a civil unions bill at the last minute.
And look, the fact is we're talking about just getting the facts out to people, letting the facts speak for themselves, especially as this impacts kids in school. Hey, Brian, we're going to hear from your colleague, Amy, on the other side of the break, but thanks for taking the time to join us. The website, massresistance.org. Read the information, look at the videos, look at the pictures, and if you can, get behind them with your support. Thanks for joining us, Brian. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, we'll be talking to Amy Contrada, who has a book about Mitt Romney. So any of you who are Romney supporters, this would be a great time to call in and maybe air your differences, 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, very, very important resource. I think you'll recognize ties in very much with what we're talking about. A resource on the separation of church and state. A 6-hour class that was taught by attorney Joan Franco with the Alliance Defense Fund came in and taught it for us at FIRE a couple of summers ago. So with very relevant major court cases, some are right on the verge of going forward now. Information about the history of this concept of separation of church and state. And then with that, if you purchase that series this week, we'll give you free my teaching series on It's Time to Rock the Boat, which will stir you, light a fire in you, be a real eye-opener. It's only $25 for the entire class, the 6-hour class on CD for your computer or your MP3 player. But if you get it this week, we'll give you my class, 6-hour class, as well for free. So that's both for just $25, and we will pay the postage to get these to you. Give us a call today, though, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Ask for the resource on separation of church and state. You'll get mine as well. It's Time to Rock the Boat. One more time, the number 1-800-278-9978. Take advantage of these resources. And if you're able, if you're led, if you can, stand with us as well. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Shake the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, sometimes we kind of bring on the controversy here on the line of fire. The goal, though, always is for there to be more light than heat. In other words, I'm not going to be controversial just to be controversial or start bashing people by name just to do that. In fact, very careful about using names and normally do it just with public figures making public statements. But there's some controversies that you simply can't avoid and things that need to be addressed. So we'll do it here on a regular basis on the line of fire. And what we're about to discuss will be very controversial. I'm sure you want to hear it more. 866-34-TRUTH if you'd like to join in the discussion. When I do interviews with special guests, as you know, I take very few calls to give maximum time to the guests, but may get to a few calls this next half hour based on the subject matter. Online, askdrbrown.org. You can weigh in on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown. Before I get to my special guest for the next part of the broadcast, I got a link sent to me yesterday. I think it was during the second hour of the broadcast, and I got it during a break, but I was laughing after reading it, and it was actually hard to stop laughing when I came back on the air, so I shared a little bit about it, but it's probably the most bizarre review thus far of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, which, by the way, academics and others are reading and sending us really encouraging notes about the research and the clarity of what's written, but not everybody likes it. And a fellow named Amos Lassen has a review. This just goes to show that anyone can write a book. I feel like I'm doing something really new with this review and that I am telling you that the only place this book belongs is at the bottom of a stack of camel dung. Not only is it poorly written, it is totally untrue and seems to be just another attempt to use the Bible to say that gay people are no blank good. Of course, it's interesting. If he actually read the book, he knows that I'm not using the Bible in the book except to talk about queer theology and so on. And then at the end to say, if you are Christian, consider these things. But the book is written for a secular audience. Maybe if Michael Brown had basic writing skills, which I guess I haven't acquired, writing 20 books. Maybe if Michael Brown had basic writing skills, I could have at least said the book was written well, but there's nothing here that is any good and the author should be dropped off the face of the earth. Amos, next time the earth is dropping people off, I'll remember your suggestion. Extraordinary. The book talks about the changes and transformations that have taken place in the last four decades of American life, and Brown maintains that this is because of the homosexual gender that no gay person has ever seen and who only hear about it from Christian fanatics. And he goes on, he calls it a manifesto of hate. And no matter how nicely it is said, it is hate. Brown fills the book with negative stereotypes and portrayals, garbage research. That's fascinating. And he shows us that gays threaten society and the existing order of things. This is nothing more than an attack by Brown, who attempts to use religion to give credence to his bigotry and narrow-mindedness, and he is trying to influence others to think as he does. This book is so offensive that I'm pretty sure that even some fundamentalists will not be able to accept it. Brown is the prime example of vilification as he distorts facts, dabbles in unreliable research, overtly lies. Bless your heart, Amos. Overtly lies and makes false claims. He comes across to me as a very sick person, much like a kid who says that if we do not play with his toys, we cannot play. There is no theological argument here. There is no argument at all because he is the kind of person, and I use that term reservedly, that cannot be argued with. So I guess I'm not actually a person. Thank you, Amos. In his mind, he is correct, and to him, that is all that matters, except perhaps for warning others about us. Anita Bryant had nothing on Michael Brown. I'm sure that the reviews on Amazon are padded with reviews by those who like Brown, and I refuse to believe that a modern, level-minded person would agree with what is written in his book. You refuse to believe it, Amos, but plenty of modern, level-minded people do agree. There's little doubt in my mind that Brown knew what the reaction to his book would be, and he therefore went out and hustled up some very good armor to post reviews for him. Boy, oh boy. Anyway, it goes on, but just want to share that with you. When we get back, a controversial book. Oh, yeah. Amy Contrada will be our guest.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, if you think my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, is controversial or got me in the target of a bunch of critics, the book by my next guest, Mitt Romney's Deception, His Stealth Promotion of Gay Rights and Gay Marriage in Massachusetts by Amy Contrada. This book will stir up even more controversy. Again, if you are a supporter of Mitt Romney, in favor of Mitt Romney, believe in Mitt Romney, by all means, give us a call, 866-34-TRUTH. Amy, thanks so much for taking time to join us on The Line of Fire today.
And thank you very much for having me. I was laughing as you read the review of your book because they could just recycle that and apply it to my book because, you know, just like they didn't read your book, they probably won't read my book. There was one review on the Amazon Kindle site when I had it up as an e-book. And the guy clearly hadn't read it. I mean, I've got over 900 footnotes with many, many linked stories. You know, 900-plus footnotes, 640 pages, all documented. And the kid hadn't read it at all. But he posted his review. He didn't even buy the book. You could tell that he hadn't purchased it the way they do it.
Oh, so of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Amos can just dig out that review and change a few words and post it when my book comes out.
That's it. Just change it from male to female. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I immediately got the book on ebook when it came out, and I was reading through it because initially on the ebook you can't see the length of it. So I'm reading for a while, thinking it's just going to be a short little thing. And I thought, whoa, you did your homework too, because my book is 691 pages with 1,500 endnotes. And the same deal. You want to dot every I and cross every T. But Amy, you and Brian involved with MassResistance.org, you don't come to it with motivation like, say, someone came out of homosexuality, now they're with an ex-gay ministry, and people say, oh, well, you're just doing this for the money. Or someone like me, well, you're just a religious minister, and you're just doing it for some other motivation. I mean, you guys have come into this, and I know the pressure of doing the work with Mass Resistance and the financial pressure and the challenges, and it's thankless. So how in the world did someone that once held up a sign for Governor Romney now come to write a book like this?
Yeah, that's one of the little mini footnotes at the end of my book. I actually did vote for him in 94 and when he ran against Ted Kennedy for Senate and lost. And I did hold a sign for him then, and in 2002 I voted for him too. Well, see, back then I'm thinking I'm voting, okay, I was one of those people who voted for the lesser of the two, you know, evils. I wouldn't say evil. I wouldn't have said evil, but not an ideal candidate, but he's better than the opponent, right? Ha ha. Fiscally conservative, supposedly, but even there, people in the know have their critiques of him. But I just thought, okay, well, he's better than the alternative. So that's how. And then I have to tell you, I didn't know all this stuff that he was doing in his past that I should have known, being a social conservative as I was. Though I was not an activist in this area at the time. I had been somewhat involved in the town I lived in earlier, Lexington, Massachusetts, with a group of parents concerned about the radical sex ed, general speaking, sex ed in the schools, you know, and a taxpayer group there. But I was not really an activist. So I didn't know, for instance, that Mitt Romney had pledged to the homosexual log cabin Republicans in 2002 that he would not fight the court ruling on gay marriage that was expected shortly after he took office. He promised them he wouldn't fight that. Did I know that? No, because I didn't read the homosexual newspaper. So I basically was ignorant about this whole side of him, which is part of the reason my title is Stealth Promotion. I mean, a lot of people thought, okay, here's a Mormon with strong family values, and he's going to represent traditional values as well as his business experience and be a fiscal conservative, etc. So we made a lot of assumptions, a lot of us, and that was one of my assumptions. And I felt terribly deceived as things played out. And he didn't stand up for parents' rights in the schools, or you name it, on the traditional values score. He just wasn't there for us.
Now, how is it, if this is public record, I'll play the devil's advocate here, or Romney's advocate, or whichever. Mm-hmm. If this is public record, we see what happened in Massachusetts under his watch as governor and abortion-related issues and things like that. This is publicly known, and candidates get attacked, and he's being attacked that he's going after Obamacare, and yet he himself had his health care plan in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Why is it that he's so widely received in many conservative circles today, and even in Christian conservative circles today, that he's widely hailed and received? I don't want to mention names of organizations or groups because they're not the focus. But if this is also known and you've documented it, and
well, it actually isn't that well known. For instance, that fact that I cited of the 2002 promise, that was actually in the New York Times in 2007 when he was first running for the Republican nomination. So it got some coverage at the time. His pandering letter to the log cabin Republicans in 1994 was also reported nationally at the end of 2006. So it got some coverage back then. Since then, he and his campaign staff have done the best to hope that all went away. Well, because of my book, it's all going to be revived. But I've noticed exactly what you're talking about, that the establishment Republicans seem to be viewing him as their candidate. And I'm not entirely sure why that is, other than, well, money speaks. And I think a lot of the conservative groups who should still be talking about these things and aren't, I think they're afraid that he's going to be elected and they'll be shut out. If they dare to bring this stuff up again. So I think a lot of conservatives are running scared. And then some of the other candidates, I think, are taking advice from bad campaign managers that are saying, avoid these issues. People don't want to talk about gay marriage. People don't want to talk about abortion. I think they're dead wrong on that, but I think some of the more conservative candidates are listening to that and dare not speak out in the debates against Romney. I don't know. It is a mystery, though. But I can tell you the reason my book is being published as it is, it's going to be an Amazon Create Space edition. I think you know this story. If you have a controversial book like this that's dealing with homosexuality or gay marriage or traditional values, publishers just don't want to go there these days either. It's just like the Republican establishment doesn't want to go there. And why is that? I'll let you answer that.
Well, you know what, it's funny. Of course, it'll be played out like this: that your book was lousy, and that's why no one wanted to touch it. That's how the gay activists will play out. Hey, look, Brown mm-hmm. book wouldn't be published. Well, actually, we've announced the fact. We put on the back cover of the book the people that wouldn't touch it and why. And mm-hmm. in no case, not a single publisher told me that the book was not well written. Not a single mm-hmm. publisher or literary agent told me that the content was not top notch. And in fact, I had a couple of publishers privately write to me and say, I think it's a very important book. I'll be eager to read it when it comes out, but mm-hmm. I can't afford to touch it. It's too controversial. These days, there's an economic cost. There's too much backlash. I will lose other potential authors. I'll have bookstores boycott my books. So I can't afford to touch it for those very reasons, even though I think it's an important book. I've had people commend it. Tremendous research, well-written, etc. So That's what we're dealing with in general, that there are certain things that are just considered to be too hot, off limits, too controversial, too costly, and you dare not raise the issues. But of course, we have to raise the issues for the sake of truth and out of love for people. We'll be called haters, but out of love for people, we've got to tell the truth. Hey, real quick before break, how is it that you got involved in working with Mass Resistance, and what's your specific role within the organization?
Okay, well, first of all, as I said, I was somewhat involved on a local level back in the 90s in Lexington, and then spent a lot of time, you know, dealing with raising children and bowed out from political activism for a while, and then a friend of mine sort of pulled me back in. And then, frankly, I was not really doing much until the gay marriage ruling came down. I had written a little bit for a conservative newspaper 2000 to 2003 or so. But then that ruling hit me, and I'm going, whoa, this is just so crazy. And I knew about Brian, and it was at the time Parents' Rights Coalition dealing with the parents' rights issues in the school. So I knew about him and had met him a couple of times. And he was the one who began the effort to get the judges removed who passed this ridiculous ruling, which is unconstitutional, and which Romney followed without any authority to do so. He violated the Constitution in doing so. So anyhow, I was very excited about that. Called up Brian, said, what can I do? This is just outrageous. And my older child had just gone off to college, so I had a bit more time on my hands to be able to help. So that's how I did that. And then I began doing just a lot of office activism work. And eventually I started a blog in 2005, which was called Mass Resistance, which is where the name came from. I will take credit for that name.
All right.
Ryan. And then I started doing more and more research for both activism and research. In fact, a lot of the some of the photographs and videos of some of the more crazy things you see on our website, I was lucky enough to be there and take a lot of those videos and photos. So I've been on the front lines doing that stuff too. So putting together research interest and just being there, being at the State House and all of this was happening.
All right, hey, listen.
That's
the
other thing about my book is that it's not research.
Let me just jump in. Yeah, we've got a break coming up. When we come back, we'll hear more about the book. And I want you to tell me some of the things that have disturbed you the most living in Massachusetts that you could share with other moms, dads, concerned citizens. Stay with us, folks.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on the broadcast today. Done something unusual. I've had two guests from Mass Resistance based in Massachusetts, massresistance.org, to find out what they're about, what they do. First, Brian Kammacher, and now Amy Contrada. Amy has written the book, Mitt Romney's Deception, His Stealth Promotion of Gay Rights and Gay Marriage in Massachusetts. Whether you are a critic of Mr. Romney or a fan of Mr. Romney, I think it's important you get the book. You can get an e-book now from Amazon, and the actual printed version will be out soon. 866-34-TRUTH. Amy, can you just tell me, as someone living in Massachusetts, some of what you've seen with your own eyes that has been most disturbing?
Well, as a mother of two kids, they're adults now, but as I said earlier, that was one of the things that woke me up. And it wasn't just a question of the sex education in the schools. We actually had to take our son out of the public schools when they simply weren't teaching spelling, arithmetic, and reading. And that came as a shock to my husband and myself because you know, we're just middle-class kids from Ohio and have lived in Massachusetts for a long time, but we weren't paying much attention. We thought, okay, Lexington's supposed to be the greatest school system in the state or one of the best. So we moved there and thought, oh, what a great place for our kids. And, you know, it was just this unbelievable shock that the basics weren't being taught. I mean, I had just not been paying that much attention. I'd hear about it in the news, but until it happens to you. But then we also found, I think in Massachusetts, I think it's better in other parts of the country for sure, but there just aren't even alternatives. People will say, okay, well, send your kid to a Christian school. Well, good luck finding a good Christian school around here. There are a few.
Afford a school. Not everyone can do that.
Yeah, luckily we were able to do that, and it worked out very well for our son. But, you know, in our daughter's case, we continued to have issues with school placement. It was just, that was a terrible nightmare, and I even was working with a group that tried to get a charter school going that would do a 3 R's traditional curriculum, and we made it to the finals. Needless to say, we got shot down at the end. But it's just so the education, that's not just a Massachusetts particular issue, but I think the alternatives here are fewer. Sure, you can homeschool if that works for your family.
What types of of course, I've talked about this on the show many a time. But as a mom, what types of things were being taught that were so objectionable? You're not just talking about don't bully kids that are different and be nice to everybody.
Well, I'll give you one example. 7th grade junior high school in Acton, Massachusetts. And I will name names. I do name names in my book. They had a social studies curriculum, which was written by the social studies head of GLSEN Boston. And
so GLSEN is Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education
Network.
Yeah,
that's Kevin Jennings' organization.
Yep. Just for
our
listeners.
Got to start in Massachusetts. I'm not just talking about how he injected homosexual issues in that, such as the phony diary of a gay revolutionary soldier, blah, blah, blah. But it was basically a hate America course. It was, oh, America was founded on these horrible principles. Look at these horrible slave traders that, you know, did this and did that. I mean, but all of the primary sources used were chosen to make the kid question America's Goodness. That's just one example.
So you're expecting he's just learning history just from an impartial perspective and learning it, though, as an American, something that would make him proud of being American or have some joy to look at his heritage. But instead it was bashing, and it was also bashing from a gay activist perspective.
Yeah, and, you know, that's just, well, even in French class, they showed the movie about the little boy who wore his mother's dresses and stuff, you know.
French, of course, in French class. How appropriate. That's why you send them.
Seventh grade. So, you know, that's the education stuff that bugs you. And then, of course, the bigger thing that's so disturbing, it's not just gay marriage, but we basically lost constitutional government in the state. And that's one of the main indictments of Mitt Romney. The Constitution's very clear that the Supreme Court did not have any right to order either of the other branches to do anything. Only the legislature can make laws, blah, blah, blah. They never did change the law. Mitt Romney kept calling their ruling law. Crazy stuff like that. So basically, constitutional government is over here. And Brian here at Mass Resistance tried to get people informed and worked up about another serious issue, which is constitutionally, our legislature is required to have a quorum in order to pass a bill, make a bill of law. Well, they'll just have these special sessions where two or three people show up and they say, oh, yeah, let's pass it. Okay, it's passed. And it's just unbelievable. No one in Massachusetts, even supposed other conservative groups, seem to get at all exercised about that.
All right, and saying, yeah, just gotta jump in because of time here.
Sure.
Your book, Mitt Romney's Deception: His Stealth Promotion of Gay Rights and Gay Marriage in Massachusetts, and I'm encouraging folks, read this and look at the evidence and come to your conclusion. Amy Contrada, that's Contrada. Just got a few seconds before we've got to run, but why is it important for people to know what's in your book?
Well, because I think there are a lot of Republicans out there. I mean, I'm specifically addressing Republicans because he's a candidate for the presidency. We want a social conservative. Of course, we'd like a fiscal conservative, too. And like I said, he might even be questioned on that score a bit. He's certainly not a social conservative. And if that's what people want and agree with me on, They need to read this. He's not pro-traditional values. He didn't do all he could to preserve marriage. He's basically trying to please both sides, whether it's the homosexual activists or traditional people in the state. And, you know, he was disingenuous throughout his whole term.
All right.
That's it. Yep.
loud and clear. Hey, listen, we've got to run, but I appreciate the efforts that you make, and I'm going to continue reading the book with interest. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us, Amy.
It will be out next week in print.
In print. Okay, wonderful. Send me
great.
A copy.
Thank you.
All right? Thank you.
God bless. I will.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
All right. Well, no time to get to anyone on the phones right now. But look, you know, I almost never focus just on a political issue, but because of the magnitude of this and Mr. Romney's candidacy, check it out for yourself. I'm just asking you to check these things out for yourself. And nobody, after today's broadcast, can think that I'm just Mr. Republican, pro-Republican. If I take issue with the president, it's not because he's a Democrat. It's issues are the issues to me. Friends, if ever there was a good time to take advantage of this resource, it's this week. 6 hours of teaching by Mr. Joe Infranco, a senior attorney with the Alliance Defense Fund, on the separation of church and state, the history, the concept, what it really is, and key cases happening today in America. 6 hours of teaching on a CD for your MP3 player computer. If you order that today, we'll give you free my six-hour class on It's Time to Rock the Boat, which was a blast to teach and really stirred the listeners. I'm sure you'll be stirred as well. Give us a call right now at 1-800-278-9978. It's two for the price of one. We'll pay postage as well. 1-800-278-9978. Friends, my bottom line today, if we're going to be followers of Jesus, we will go against the grain. If we're going to be followers of conscience and conviction, we will go against the grain. If we will seek to do what is right and stand for moral sanity, we will go against the grain. Take it on the chin, friends. Do us right, regardless of cost or consequence. Walk in love, even if people call it hate, and you'll be blessed. You know, the moment we talk about our Christian values, it gets thrown back in our face. What about separation of church and state? We'll talk about that today and get a great report from Liberty Counsel as well.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
If you were looking in my library, which is in three or four or five different locations because of the size of it, if you were looking in my personal library, looking up certain subjects, you wouldn't know where I stood on the subject based on looking in my library. And you would find bunches of books on one side of the subject and bunches of books on the other side of the subject. It's the same with the issue of separation of church and state. You'll find books I have by men like David Barton, well-known in conservative Christian circles, arguing for a viewpoint that would be, something very commonly understood by many conservative Christians. And you'll find books by old folks like Alan Dershowitz, his book Blasphemy, a well-known Jewish attorney and Harvard professor, saying that the way evangelicals are trying to argue the Constitution, they're hijacking it and changing it. We're going to sort some things out today, encourage you to stand for what's right today, and hear from Liberty Counsel, an attorney with Liberty Counsel, about a victory taking place here in America. There are many, but it's good to hear victories as well. Thanks for joining us. Michael Brown, absolutely delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, number to call. That's 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org, or on Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Let me read something to you from David Barton's very little book, Separation of Church and State, What the Founders Meant. He's written a lot on this. This is just a little mini book. He says this: a conversation I once had with a U.S. congressman, who's also an accomplished attorney, illustrates how deeply this non-constitutional phrase, separation of church and state, has been infused in our constitutional thinking. As we were discussing the importance of basic religious values and teachings to public behavior in society and in general, he lamented, "We know these values are important. It's unfortunate that we can't do anything to promote them." Surprised, I queried, "Why not?" He replied, "We just can't." I persisted, "Why not?" He answered, "Because of separation of church and state." I responded, "Separation of church and state, what about it?" He replied, "It's in the Constitution. The Constitution won't permit us to have religious values in public arenas." I returned, "That phrase is not in the Constitution." Forcefully, he countered, "Yes, it is." "No, it's not." "Yes, it is." We went back and forth. I finally gave him a copy of the Constitution and asked, "Would you please find that phrase for me?" He replied triumphantly, "I'd be happy to." He immediately turned to the First Amendment, read it, and became very embarrassed. He said, "I can't believe this. In law school, they always taught that's what the First Amendment said." Amazed, I asked, "You've never read the Constitution for yourself?" He replied, "We were never required to read it in law school." Now, I've had folks call in this broadcast and tell me that if I have, say, a religious conviction that infuses my moral values or my political values or my economic values, whatever it is, infuses my life with particular values, that I don't even have the right to vote accordingly because of separation of church and state. That's how far some people take it. Now, on the other hand, folks say, look, we should have 10 commandments out in our schools, and that's perfectly fine. That's not promoting state religion. That's not what the founding fathers were concerned about. Others would say, oh, no, they would absolutely oppose it. I read an article in, CNN, USA Today, one of those, about separation of church and state and founding fathers, and had various quotes, Thomas Jefferson and others, and how they would absolutely oppose these kinds of things that evangelicals are pushing for today. But the article failed to mention that Thomas Jefferson attended church regularly as president at the Capitol building, because that's where their church met, one of the largest churches in the region. Nobody thought that it was a problem for this building, this very public national government building, to house church services. So we're going to sort this out. And the biggest thing is we're going to be as practical as we can. Stay with us.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you, friends, for being part of the broadcast today. If you weren't there, think of it. I'd be talking to the air. Just think how lonely that would be. Just think how, what that would do to me if I was just talking to the air. And think on your end, if you were just sitting there listening to nothing. So I guess we kind of need each other. This is like some synergy here. Hey, seriously, great to have you on the air, listening with us. 866-34-TRUTH. Talking about separation of church and state. It's Wednesday on the Line of Fire. It means our focus is on moral, cultural issues. We've got an important show tomorrow about Christian Zionism, attacks on Christian Zionism. I think you'll really find that eye-opening as well. But today, focusing on separation of church and state, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. Again, Facebook, Ask Dr. Brown. Now, would you like to show off your knowledge of American history by telling us where the phrase separation of church and state comes from and the explicit concept where it comes from? If you'd like to show off your knowledge, give us a call at 866-34-TRUTH with as many specific details as you can. You say, what will you win? You will win the praise and affirmation of the entire listening audience. What do you think of that? Okay. We understand that the founding fathers were very concerned about state religion and the government imposing a religion on the nation. We understand there were concerns about that. After all, part of American history is wanting religious liberties to be free from what was considered now the tyranny of the homeland in England, not just with Boston Tea Party and economic issues, but with other issues. And there's part of the history of Puritans fleeing here and so on, just part of our history. And the idea of a state religion, that you have the Church of England, that you would have the Church of America or something like that, obviously, that was something that the founding fathers didn't want. And it's true that different states would have a particular expression of Christianity in that particular state and could make it difficult for folks who were not part of that. We understand that. However, the idea of separation of church and state, the way it's commonly applied, is a historical anomaly. In other words, for people in, say, elementary school to have a reader that used scripture verses in American history, no one would have batted an eyelash and separation of church and state. Okay, no one would have thought like that. The idea that you can't have a religious display in a public building or government-owned building, no one would have thought of that. Or even the presence of 10 commandments. No one would have thought, separation of church and state, we can't have that in the government building or public building. Now, for sure, the idea that the church could impose its ways on the state and order the state to do a certain thing so that you would have some type of theocracy, or that the state could order the church to do things a certain way, that's not what they were countenancing. Again, but the way this is used today is completely wrong. So first, we will get a call from a historian. When you get a call this quick, it only means folks have the correct answer. Toby in Atlanta, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Great. How you doing today?
Good. So let us hear the correct origins of the separation of church and state phrase and concept.
Okay. If I remember it right, it was from Thomas Jefferson. And
yes, sir.
I believe it was from a letter he wrote to the, I think it was the Danbury Baptist Church or an association. And I think the exact term was the wall of separation between church and state.
Oh, man, awesome. That's the same way I learned it, sir. Yeah, the Baptists and Danbury had written to President Jefferson wanting to have certain assurances about these things. And as he wrote back, that's where the phrase comes from about the wall. So as you understand it, what was the intent of what Jefferson was conveying?
I think what Jefferson was saying that the two should not intertwine, much like it did with the Church of England and what happened over there. So there would be that separation between the church and state.
Right, anything, of course, no state church. Was there anything about keeping the state out of the church, making sure that the state did not impose its will or ways on the church? And that was part of the concern, as opposed to trying to keep the church out of the state.
Right.
All right. Yep, we're certainly in harmony. Hey, tell you what, since you did call just to call, I want to send you free the CD that we're sending out or offering as a resource this week on separation of church and state with my friend Attorney Joe Infranco. So stay on the line, Toby. We'll get your name and address and send that to you as a gift, right? There would be no state church. That was a major issue. But one of the key things, and law professor Stephen Carter points this out, there's always the concern that the state can impose its ways on religion because of its power, because of its influence. And that was one of the concerns that founding fathers had, that wouldn't happen. And Stephen Carter makes it very clear that the issue is not keeping the church or religion out of the state. The original concern was the opposite of that. And Carter's laid that out very well. We've quoted him to that effect. And again, in short, we're talking about freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. So I want to make this as simple as I can, okay? As simple as I can. Because people will raise all kinds of excellent quotes and from founding fathers and from men like Jefferson and Adams and others and talk about our history and talk about how there's been a careful separation and on and on. And there's a lot of accuracy to what's being said on the one hand. On the other hand, it's a distorted picture because they're not even recognizing what normal life was like and the role that religion played in normal life. And look, why is it that you still have an opening prayer at Congress? I mean, what does that mean to you, the fact that still is happening here in America? Okay, let me make this as simple as I can. There is absolutely nothing in our legal history or in the intent of the Constitution or any of our foundational documents that in any way stands in the way of you as a believer living out your faith in the public square. That's number one. And number two, based on your faith, acting accordingly in the voting booth and in other decisions that you make, as long as you're not breaking the law. In other words, if based on your Christian beliefs alone, or your Jewish beliefs alone, whatever beliefs you have, based on your religious beliefs alone, you say abortion is wrong and I am going to vote for pro-life candidate, of course you have every right to do that. And if you want to write an editorial and say, as a Christian, I believe abortion is wrong, and try to get it out in a newspaper, in a letter to the editor, or start a publication saying, as a follower of Jesus, or as a religious person, or as a non-religious person, as a Hindu, as a Buddhist, as a Muslim, I believe abortion is wrong. There is not the slightest hint anywhere in our Constitution, in any of our founding documents, that you do not have the full right to express those beliefs and to try to influence public policy based on those beliefs. Nothing is stopping you from saying, okay, I live in Atlanta and I oppose same-sex marriage because of my biblical views. I can't give you a good social reason. I'm not a sociologist. Kids need a mom and dad. Marriage is a man and woman. But I'm not a sociologist. I believe the Bible. That's what you say. And based on my biblical beliefs, I don't think we should have same-sex marriage. You can absolutely vote accordingly, and you can absolutely try to influence public opinion, and you can appeal to legislators, and you can say, do what's right in the sight of God. You can absolutely do that. And a legislator can get up and say, based on my religious beliefs, I am voting against same-sex marriage. And that is absolutely perfectly fine. Just like, think of this. Someone goes to a gay church. Someone goes to what would be called an affirming church or welcoming church. Those are some of the terminology. And they say, based on our reading of the Gospels, we believe in the law of love, and we believe that Jesus is accepting of all people, and we believe that marriage should be the union of any two loving, caring people that make a commitment to each other. That's what we believe. No one's stopping you, based on your religious beliefs, however deeply I differ with them, from trying to base law on that. Or to influence legislation, or to influence a judge to think a certain way. Now, obviously, when you're talking about judges ruling cases, they have to go based on legal information and precedent and things like that and the documents they're dealing with. They can't just say, the Holy Spirit told me to. No, you can't do that. That's understood. But if you want to be an elected official and say, I am a Muslim, and as a Muslim, I will campaign for polygamy, okay, as outrageous as that would be, You have the right to do that. The separation of church and state in no way stands against that. And the first hour, we were talking with a guest from Massachusetts about State Senator Ruben Diaz, who happens to be a liberal Democrat, but he was the most outspoken opponent of same-sex marriage in New York. He's a Pentecostal minister and a liberal Democrat. And he bussed in, I was told, 5 busloads of people from churches, Hispanic churches, and they were singing in Spanish, you know, Power of the Blood or those whatever Christian hymns like that at a same-sex rally to say we oppose same-sex marriage. Marriage should be the union of a man and woman. They had every right to do that. Nothing in separation of church and state stops that, speaks against it. Rightly understood. Back with more.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Have you ever noticed this? Have you ever noticed that first when we get closer to political campaigns, that everybody gets religious? You know, all the candidates, especially with presidential campaign, they want you to know their story, their testimony, their church affiliation. And once they're in office, they don't dare talk about those things. It's just fascinating. You know, President Bush and former Vice President Gore, and they're running and sharing their story. Now one's a Methodist or one's a Baptist, whatever they were. And it may have been true in one case and not the other. God knows the details. But it was fascinating then when President Bush was asked who his favorite philosopher was. I think that was the question. He said it was Jesus. Oh, how could he say, oh, no, we're going to have religious fundamentalism. Oh, no, taking over millennialism. He thinks it's the end of the world. Come on. Where in the world is that coming from? What's the world opposing the things of God and the world reacting? Jesus said that the world would hate us the way it hated him. So Jesus is always going to remain controversial. We're talking about separation of church and state. 866-34-TRUTH. It's 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Make sure you go to askdrbrown.org and click on the Line of Fire, because we've got a lot of resources and links that are really relevant and of special interest to the broadcast today. If you listened to the broadcast yesterday, where I talked about what's right and wrong about the prosperity gospel, I failed to mention especially that we had a lot of links, free resources you could listen to, read my article on the gospel of martyrdom versus the gospel of success, all on our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire so you can check out yesterday's program or today's program for relevant links as well. But I find it also fascinating that if, say, a conservative candidate, normally be a Republican, ends up speaking at some church-related, oh, no, how can this be? This is outrageous. This is, oh, what about separation of church and state? This, how can this be? And then you get maybe a liberal Democrat somewhere speaking at some gospel church, some liberal gospel church, and they're there on a Sunday morning campaigning and nobody bats an eyelash. You think, what in the world is that? Now, we have a situation right now with Governor Rick Perry. Governor Rick Perry, Texas, obviously ready to move forward with a major presidential campaign from all appearances, is calling for a day of prayer, looking to fill a stadium with, 60,000 people. And a number of good friends and colleagues of mine are involved with that. I'm not personally involved with it, but involved with it and going together to pray and going together to seek God. Some may really believe that Rick Perry is the man to lead our nation. Others may simply be going to participate in prayer and repentance and seeking the face of God. That's perfectly fine for Governor Perry to do that. There is absolutely no violation of separation of church and state. Zero. You can call and contest that with me. That's your right. We don't have separation between callers I agree with and disagree with, and only ones I agree with can get on the air. No, to the contrary, I look forward to callers who disagree. But there's nothing he's doing that violates separation of church and state. Now, of course, the media is going to look at every single person that has any association with Governor Perry on that day and then try to find the most bizarre teaching that any one of these people have ever done, and then try to make Rick Perry look like some right-wing extremist fanatic who's trying to drive demons out of bathroom closets. I don't know. I mean, just they'll make them into some fundamentalist religious wacko, and they'll try to do it by guilt by association. You know how it works. Find somebody that's associated with someone who's associated with someone who's associated with someone who said something weird, wild, crazy out there sometime, and then make it as if that's Governor Perry's own position. Can I just say something, though? I quite obviously, could never run for major political office. Number one, I don't feel in any way it's what God has called me to do. There's no inkling in me that I'm supposed to do it whatsoever. Number two, I don't feel I'd be qualified to based on my areas of specialization and where I am strong. But most importantly, look, I've been preaching the gospel for decades. I believe in spiritual warfare. I believe there's a real devil and demons. I've ministered to people who were demonized and watched them get delivered in front of my eyes. It's not happening every day, but I've seen it happen. We've had crazy things around the world as are preached and ministered and so on. And you want to take quotes from me, I can back them up scripturally, but just because you can back them up scripturally doesn't mean they're going to make sense to the world. So of course you're going to have people that are associated with Governor Perry at this prayer meeting. What is it, August 6th? Is that when it's supposed to take place? Early August. Of course you're going to have people who are associated with Governor Perry at this prayer meeting. Some of them, again, dear friends of mine, people like Lou Engel, people like Mike Bickle, some of the most solid men of prayer that I know in the world today, and pleased to count them as friends. And if you listen to some of their teaching on spiritual warfare, or listen to some of their teaching on the end times, or some teaching on the book of Revelation, or things like that, like, they believe, well, we're talking spiritually. Yeah, they're Christians. They're followers of Jesus. Hey, what's in the Bible is quite controversial. So the fact that you're going to get somebody who's associated with someone who said something that sounds outlandish to the world is no surprise. It's no surprise whatsoever. And look, Jesus, who was the most perfectly wise, loving human being who ever lived on this earth, okay? God in the flesh. He was hated. He was rejected. He was misunderstood. His family thought he was out of his mind, Mark the third chapter at one point. Religious leaders said he's demon-possessed, he's demonized. That's what they said about him. So how do we expect that the world is going to look at us and say, you guys are just great. Oh, we think your religious beliefs make perfect sense. Oh, we think your spiritual beliefs make perfect sense. We absolutely believe in what you're doing. No, if we are real followers of Jesus, we're going to be misunderstood and hated. And you know what I've found? Very interestingly, what I found is this, that no matter how much academic background I have that gives me some degree of authority to address certain subjects within my field, that no matter how gracious I may be on an interpersonal level, and no matter how much I may do my best to interact with and listen to people who differ with me, because of my views, I'm still going to be hated. I'm still going to be rejected. I'm still going to be called bigoted, intolerant, hateful, and all of that, which is perfectly fine. Nobody's come to crucify me yet. They crucified my master, and he said that as the master, so the servant. So the fact people may hate me or vilify me, well, of course I'm a follower of Jesus. We deceive ourselves to think that somehow the world will like us if we can just present our theology in proper terms. So that the more clearly we present it, the more accurately we present it, the more divisive it will be, the more it will separate light from darkness, the more people will love us, the more people will hate us. No two ways around that. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, when we come back, I want to update you on something very important happening on a national, political, spiritual level. Hey, Jane, I want to get your call on the other side of the break as well. You'll be first up. And then we'll be hearing from an attorney with Liberty Counsel. More insight on separation of the church and state, as well as some encouraging reports about things taking place right here in America. All of that, friends, when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to share something with you that's happening on the... Well, in front of our eyes, nationwide, it's more major than you might even realize. I've said, friends, for some time, pastors, leaders don't want to get involved with issues like same-sex marriage and legislation like that, and don't ask, don't tell, and the military being repealed. They don't want to get involved with those things. It's too controversial. I just look, I understand you don't want to have a political emphasis, but you still have to stand up for what's right, regardless. And if you don't stand up and speak now, I'm telling you, the next thing coming, you're going to be told you can't tell a person they can change who has unwanted same-sex attractions. They come to you and say, I don't want to live a homosexual lifestyle. Can you help me, Pastor? So the day's going to come when you won't be allowed to tell people that they can change. And then the next thing that'll happen is that you won't even be allowed to say that homosexual practice is sin. So right now, in front of our eyes, friends, this is playing out. You have the husband of presidential candidate Michelle Bachmann, himself a counselor with a PhD, with a counseling clinic. Someone comes to him and claims to be homosexual, wanting to change, and of course is offered counseling to help them change. Christian counseling, why not? This is now a national scandal. How dare they? No one can change. You're born this way. You can't change. All major psychiatric and psychological associations know you can't change. And this is now being launched as an attack on Michelle Bachmann, a presidential candidate. Friends, this is big. We speak now or forever we hold our peace. 866-34-TRUTH. Before we get to our guest from Liberty Council, I just want to grab one call. Jane in Atlanta, Georgia, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Dr. Brown. I was just hoping you could quickly, and I know you want to get to your guest, but if you could quickly help me to understand something. It's something that I hear a lot. I've listened to your program ever since it started in Atlanta, and I just love it. I love it. I recommend it, and I just feel that you are somebody of truth and that you're a fair person. But the thing, one thing I didn't see, but I'm starting to see now, is what is this thing where you have God-fearing people who somehow link Christianity to a party? You know, every time I hear it, it disturbs me somewhat, because I do not believe there's a such thing as a Christian party. I believe there are ungodly people who are Democrat, just like there are ungodly people who are Republican. I believe it was Chip Ingram who, I think, preached the best message on a political message on that. And that it just seems like there's a promotion of a political agenda. If I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, the vote to get the same-sex marriage passed in New York was up to two Republican candidates. Am I not correct on that?
Yeah, there were several Republicans caved in. The one who led the charge to uphold same-sex marriage was a liberal Democrat, a Hispanic Pentecostal minister named Ruben Diaz. Let me say this, though, Jane. I've just got a few seconds before the break. It's a very important question, so let me address it. And thanks for the kind words about the show. Okay, number one, white evangelicals made the error, especially with the beginning of the Reagan years, to associate the Republican Party with the Christian Party, because the Republican Party was stronger on family values and pro-life things, etc. So, in a sense, we put our eggs in that basket, and that was a mistake. Now, often in black evangelical churches, the Democratic Party is the party, and I was told the black churches that were praying for Obama to be elected. So the error can go both ways. So I agree with you, Jane. What we have to do is hold to kingdom values. And as Dr. King said, the church must be reminded that it's not the master nor the servant of the state, but the conscience of the state. We must be the conscience of the state. We must challenge the political parties to do what's right and then vote for those who will stand for what is right. By all means, we should be involved. Thanks for the call. Great question.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us, friends. That number, 866-34-TRUTH, to get in the conversation. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. It's my delight to have attorney Harry Mehet with us from Liberty Counsel. Liberty Counsel is on the front lines of many of the major righteousness issues taking place, legal cases around the country. Harry, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you for having me with you, Dr. Brown.
Now, we've been talking earlier in the broadcast about issues concerning separation of church and state and how completely this is misused today in ways that the Founding Fathers never would have imagined. You know, freedom from religion versus freedom of religion. And you're dealing with cases like that all the time, correct?
Yes, indeed we are, Dr. Brown.
So what's happened recently? I know you've had some court victories. I know something happened in Santa Rosa recently in Florida, which is major. We hear a lot of bad news. are there some victories taking place as well?
Yes, there are, and I appreciate the chance to discuss them today. What we have seen take place, Dr. Brown, in the last few years is no longer simply an attempt to separate church and state, so to speak, to have freedom from religion, but an actual determined, persistent attempt by some groups like the ACLU to actually criminalize Christianity in the public square. And that sounds like hyperbole to many, but what we have seen take place in particular in Santa Rosa County, Florida, in the panhandle of Florida, illustrates that this is, in fact, the goal of these adversaries of freedom.
And let me just jump in to say this. I lived in Pensacola, Florida for 7 years, which was right next to Pace and the county in which some of these things happen, the panhandle of Florida, as you mentioned. And this is a really conservative religious area. In Pensacola, there were like 600 churches, maybe 100,000 people in the larger region there. And I remember when there was legislation that you couldn't have public prayer at the beginning of a football game at a school, that the schools, they all just all the louder prayed. So this is a very conservative area, very Christian-based area, Bible Belt. And this is where this battle was taking place, which makes it all the more outrageous.
Yeah, you are quite right about that, and that is precisely why they drew the attention of the ACLU, who in 2008, having just raised $330 million over and above their annual budget of $80 million, decided that they were going to go to work in these problem areas.
Problem areas.
Yes. Yeah. And so they set up shop in Pensacola specifically to target Santa Rosa County nearby, and sued the school district there, alleging that there was entirely too much religious expression and prayer taking place. And so when faced with this Goliath with a $330 million war chest, the school board for Santa Rosa County unfortunately did what we see happen across the country. They rolled over without a fight, and they voluntarily bargained away their constitutional liberties, not only the leadership, but also the liberties of the teachers and the staff and the students and the parents of students in the Santa Rosa public schools. And the way they did that is by agreeing to a consent decree, an agreement between the parties, but not just any agreement, one that is signed into the law of the land by the federal court in Pensacola, and that carries with it the power of contempt, the power to send someone to jail for violating it. And I have to tell you, Dr. Brown, this is was a 12-page agreement, and in my practice as a constitutional lawyer, I have never, ever seen such a brazen attempt to steal God-given constitutional rights of free expression. It just takes your breath away when you read this consent decree, because it doesn't just prohibit teachers from praying with kids in the classroom, as one might expect to see in light of Supreme Court precedent. It goes so far beyond that. The words "God bless" were outlawed in Santa Rosa County. Teachers and students were told they could not even utter those words under pain of contempt.
You're talking about just in a... Are you talking about at a formal gathering or in a school? Under what circumstances were they not allowed to say God bless?
I'm talking about a class president who wanted to address his fellow students, giving them a non-religious, secular speech, a welcome back to school speech. He asks, well, can I end it with good luck and God bless? They say, you can say good luck, but God bless is a prayer, and there will be no prayer under this consent decree in Santa Rosa County. Just like teachers were told, hey, if you have an email from a parent to you that ends with God bless or that contains God bless or other religious content, you can't even hit reply on that email to respond to the parent, because by hitting reply, you're going to incorporate their religious content into your email, and it's that draconian.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, teachers were told, hey, when somebody tells you at a faculty meeting that their mom is dying of cancer, you can tell them, we'll keep you in our thoughts, but you can't tell them we'll keep you in our prayer, because that's prayer in school, and that violates the consent decree.
And the administration consented to this. They were under that much pressure and fear that they actually consented to this.
Unbelievably, yes, they did. Without asking the teachers what they thought, they made this decision on behalf of the teachers, thinking and hoping that the ACLU would simply go away. But the ACLU did not go away. Instead, what the ACLU did, once it obtained this horrendous law, it began to pursue criminal contempt charges against teachers that violated it. And so it was that in 2009, we found ourselves defending Frank Lay and Robert Freeman, a principal and his athletic director, who were brought up on criminal charges because they said a prayer of a 15-second prayer to bless a meal that they had with other adults, by the way, not even students, at a luncheon to celebrate the opening of a new athletic facility. They found themselves as criminal defendants in a federal court, a whisker away from jail, remarkable, because of nothing more than saying a prayer over their meal. Unbelievable that such a thing could even happen in what we call the land of the free.
So what did you folks do? You've got this massively budgeted organization against you. You've got this document here, and I was following the case, and it was absolutely mind-boggling to me that it went as far as it did, but I didn't know even some of the details that you just shared in terms of what was in that agreement. So what happened? Because there's a positive outcome to this story.
There really is. You know, God has been so good and gracious to us in Santa Rosa County, and we were able to successfully defend all three of the individuals that were brought up on contempt charges. They were each found not guilty or not liable for contempt. But after we did that, we knew that this law, this consent decree, could not stand, because as long as it stood, the same thing could happen to someone else. And so for the last year and a half, we have been in a bitter and very contested battle against the ACLU and, unfortunately, against the school board that had become the ACLU's ally in this, in defending the consent decree. And we were very busily engaged in final preparations for trial that was scheduled to begin this week, when the ACLU and the school board finally saw the writing on the wall and they decided to, quote-unquote, voluntarily back down. They agreed to our demands. They agreed to modify the consent decree to completely gut it and rewrite it in a way that now protects the rights of individuals to express their religious views on their own time and when they're not acting as agents of the state. And in the process, they've also agreed to pay Liberty Counsel a handsome price for the attorney's fees and costs that they forced us to incur in the case. So we count that as a fantastic outcome. The return of liberty to Santa Rosa County is a fantastic end to this long struggle.
Yeah. Hey, let me say God bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. God bless you.
Thanks. We've just got about a minute before the break, but you couldn't put pressure on them financially. I mean, this is a court. What was it? You said the handwriting on the wall. What was it that caused them to see we're fighting a losing battle here?
What it was the evidence that we obtained in depositions and in discovery in this case that showed the breathtaking, atrocious ways in which their consent decree had been implemented. You know, teachers being told they could not even attend a church service in the evening or play the piano there because somehow someone might think the school was sponsoring that church service. simply because the teachers were there. All kinds of unexplainable ways in which this consent decree was entered came to light, and they just knew that even in front of a liberal judge, an activist judge, this kind of evidence would not go unnoticed, and their consent decree would eventually come down. And so they agreed to do the right thing. They agreed to do now what they should have agreed to do 2 years ago, when it would have been a lot less expensive for them.
Well, thank you, sir, for what you're doing. And I want to encourage listeners out there, stand up for what's right, friends. Don't back down and cower. Stand up for what's legally, constitutionally protected. Do what's right. Harry, the website for Liberty Counsel is
www.lc.org.
All right. Keep up the great work. And again, God bless you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I've said it before, I'll say it again. Just like taxes, you pay me now, you pay me later. That's what the IRS will tell you. Well, look, you'll believe me now or you'll believe me later. The things we're talking about, the alarm we're sounding, there are reasons for it, friends. And when we talk about gay activism being the principal threat to religious freedom today, you just heard about another aspect of attacks on religious freedom from Attorney Harry Mahet from Liberty Counsel. Again, their website, LC as in libertycounsel.org. I am not talking about if you've got a cousin or a son or daughter that identifies as gay or lesbian, and they're in a relationship with another gay or lesbian person. You say, well, how's that hurting me? Well, I'm not looking at this selfishly. I'm not looking at what's hurting me. I'm looking at what's best for society and what's best for those people. But that's not – the issue is gay activism. The issue is silencing of dissent. The issue is removing religious freedoms. And right now, the thing that is under attack is the idea that it's possible for homosexual change, either through counseling, therapy, or through the power of God. I write about it extensively in A Queer Thing Happened to America. If you don't have the book yet, order it today. You need to. Trust me. Trust me. Every day that goes by, it's more needed than the day before. Go to Amazon and order A Queer Thing Happened to America. But the simple fact is that there is now an all-out attack on the idea that anyone can actually change or that therapy can help. So to the point, or the power of God. To the point that Michelle Bachmann's husband is under real attack because the clinic that he has, the counseling clinic, that they actually tell someone, you have the possibility of change. A person comes to them and says, I'm not at home with my same-sex attractions. I want to be married. I want to have kids. You know, same-sex attraction violates my religious, moral convictions. Can you help me? Yeah, it's a process. It could be a long haul. It could be very difficult. But yes, we can help you. That is under such attack now that it's being used to attack Michelle Bachmann because this is her husband. Outrageous. Outrageous. And I'll say it again. I've told people for some time now, pastors, leaders don't want to get involved, same-sex marriage issues, those things, don't want to get political. I said, listen, stand up for what's right. Reach out to the homosexual community with compassion. Offer them the transforming love of God. But take a stand for what's right in your pulpits without making it a major, without becoming majorly political. Stand up for what's right. Otherwise, I'm just telling you what's coming next. You won't be allowed to say homosexuals can change. And the next thing, you won't be able to say homosexual practice is sin. 866-34-TRUTH. We're well into this, friends. This is hardly even a prediction. We're well into this. Tracy in Philadelphia, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
God bless you, Dr. Brown. Just recently started listening to you maybe 2 months ago, but it seems like every time I turn you on, this is the subject, this is the theme, and I am a witness, a living witness, to the power of God for transitioning out of that lifestyle and into the lifestyle of a heterosexual. Lived that way for 20 years from a child. Actually thought it was innate. Actually thought I was born that way. And God showed me that it's a sin and it's an abomination. And I'm wondering, where is the church? Why don't I hear the church? I hear you, but where is the church? And we're silent. And because we're silent, they have a voice.
Yeah, Tracy, we have to, especially Wednesdays, we focus on these issues, but they come up so much that it's something we just can't avoid. Tracy, in many ways, the church has lost its voice. The church has lost its courage. The church would rather not go against the grain and be controversial. We're not talking about hating people. We're talking about loving people and saying, especially to those who are convicted about their same-sex behavior, that there is a better way. So you were in this for 20 years. You were convinced you were born that way, and therefore you couldn't change. And how did God bring this process of change about your life, Tracy?
Dr. Brown, I was actually raised in the church, and through some things that went on in my life, I lost my mother when I was young. I lost my grandmother, who was my guardian. And when I lost her, I became so angry with God that I didn't go to church anymore. I stopped going, and the more rebellious I became, I believe it opened the door for this to come in, and it totally perverted my desire for a nurturer. It totally perverted it. And I didn't want to talk about God to anyone, and it changed my whole personality. I went from a woman, a little girl who loved dresses, to you didn't even know me anymore. And in 2000, I was in Los Angeles in a hotel. I was working, and I, the voice of God, he came into the hotel room. And I thank God, because I could have died in it. But he came in, and he just showed me his love. And that's why we have to do this in love. We cannot hate. We have to do it in love. And he showed me his love, and he spoke an audible word, told me to stay in my room because I had a friend. My friend lived, we lived together. And she had another room, but because we were, you know, working and we were conducting business, and he told me, stay in my room. The next morning, I was delivered. I was delivered. I saw it, and then I went to the Bible, and I saw it, and I was delivered. But I know that everyone doesn't get that type of deliverance. Some people need the counseling. They need the therapy. They have to have it. They need that support. Amen. And so I asked God today, because I saw this on the internet with Michelle Bachman's husband. Yeah. And when I saw it, the tears just flew from my eye. And I said, God, where is the voice? Where are we? And I believe that Dr. Brown, God is not going to just sit on this. He took me to Habakkuk. He's not going to just sit on this. But we and he told me in prayer the other morning, he said, tell them, don't fear them that can kill the body, but fear him whom is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. And so God is going to deal with this, but we have to be a church of love.
Yeah.
We have to embrace them in love, Dr. Brown. This I praise God and I bless God for you. I just thank him for you. This thing is just a passion for me. Yeah. And I see it in Philadelphia, 10-year-olds, 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds running around confused in their gender. And they don't even know about gender.
Yep. Absolutely.
And so I bless God for you. Keep up the good work. Keep me in prayer. I'm not a writer, but I just wrote what God did for me.
Awesome.
Just copyrighted it today.
All right. Listen, Tracy, get it to my attention. You've got our website, AskDrBrown.org. Are you a reader, by the way, Tracy? You like
to
read?
I love to read. I'm hearing you talk about your books.
All right. You stay on hold there, and I'll send you an autographed copy of my book as a gift to you. I'm out of time, but awesome testimony of the goodness and love.
Dr. Brown, you keep doing the work.
All right. You stay right there, and we'll put you on hold, and we'll send you a book. Hey, friends, that's the power of the gospel. That's the power of the gospel. We've been talking about separation of church and state. Very, very important resource. I want to encourage you to get my friend Joe Infranco, attorney with Alliance Defense Fund, teaching 6 hours on separation of church and state, key cases happening in America today. It's $25, postage paid, but we'll give you free this week with it. My series, It's Time to Rock the Boat, also 6 hours on CD for your computer or MP3 player. So great deal. You'll be blessed. You'll be challenged. You'll be informed. Call us at 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 for these special resources, and you'll help us reach more people as well. That's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today is this. The cry is going forth. There are people looking for guidance. There are people looking for light. There are people looking for help. There are people looking for wisdom. Will you stand up and let your voice be heard? Will you stand up for that which is right?